American composer John Cage was born 100 years ago, and to celebrate the 100th anniversary of his birth, there are performances and festivals around the world, including here in Winnipeg. Groundswell is presenting John Cage 100 Years, and that's next Sunday, April 1st, at the Franco-Manitoban Cultural Centre. Local composer and musician Jim Hiscott is the co-curator of the concert, and he joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Karen.
So the piece we just heard is part of the concert coming up this Sunday. What else will people hear at the event?
There's a piece called Three Dances, which is for two prepared pianos. And it's a large sort of piece where the pianos are prepared, so they sound like percussion instruments. So the two pianos together will sound like a big percussion orchestra. And we have the premiere of a new dance choreographed by Claire Marshall for two dancers and two pianos. And a solo cello piece called Etude Boreale, and there's versions of it with solo cello and also with cello and piano. Aria, which is for solo voice, and that's going to be sung by Rosemary Vanderhoeft, mezzo-soprano. And there's also a piece called 2-6, which is one of Cage's last pieces he ever wrote in 1992. Very kind of long notes, long slow notes, and it's for violin and piano with Carl Stobie. And Cheryl Pauls is also a co-curator, and she plays the piano. Verna Wiebe as well, Leanne Zacharias, and I think I mentioned everyone, and myself.
And Cage composed for decades. Was it difficult to choose which pieces to include in the concert?
Well, you know, there's just no way you can do a perfect retrospective. There's just so many different choices. So in the end, it's sort of what you are interested in, and what I suppose we could have done it by tossing the doing I Ching, calculations to introduce chance into it. But Cheryl was very interested in the three dances, and Claire Marshall was very interested in choreographing it. We really wanted to have one of those late pieces, this 2-6, a number piece, because these pieces are very kind of meditative, but not tolling at all, just sort of, and there's often like big spaces, and it's very beautiful late pieces, so we wanted to have one of those. The Etude Boreale is more for the middle period, more notes, more stuff going on, more dissonance, but based also on chants and star charts, which is kind of an interesting thing. And I like a lot of Cage's music, but playing the accordion, there's not very much I can play, and I really like this particular piece. It's sort of an early piece of Cage's, and just a totally different world, really. It's called his romantic period, a very short period of his after the three dances and prepared piano pieces, slightly, and a lot of things were concurrent with Cage, but shortly after that he got more into Zen and chance operations and all kinds of different things. But really all these streams sort of continue in different ways in his music all through his life. There's just so many different styles and so many different little avenues that he went along that you can really make up any kind of concert with Cage's music.
And you will be incorporating chants into the concert with audience participation. Can you explain how that'll work?
Yes, at intermission we have a very interesting thing. Cage wrote a number of pieces called Imaginary Landscapes, and they usually involve some kind of media. And we chose Imaginary Landscape number 5, which was originally for 42 LP recordings. And originally they were played and recorded on 8 channels and then mixed and then played back. Well, now that we have, you know, computers with, we can do automation. We can automate the mix and with all the dynamics and everything. But what we want to do now is get people to bring their MP3 players, which can be, you know, iPods, iPhones, Blackberries, whatever kind of device they have, with their favorite tune track queued up, and then it'll be interactive because we will have all these inputs, 16 inputs. So I can have 16 people at a time. They plug in. Everybody starts at the same time, but we don't listen to the actual player. It all goes through the computer, and then they're mixed by way of the score by John Cage. So it's really kind of a new sort of experiment, and it's The chance part is we have no idea what people are going to bring.
And do you have any idea how it'll be mixed? Is that's random as well?
Well, you know, the mixing is prescribed in the Cage mm-hmm. score, but you know, pieces start and end, and we don't know, you know, when things are going to, you know, we have no idea actually how the things are going to interact, which is going to be fun. We might even be able to do a couple of run throughs of it with people if we have more than 16, which would be kind of fun too.
Well, that sounds great. One thing I want to ask you about Cage, and one thing I read about him was that one of his teachers, the composer Arnold Schoenberg, said that Cage wasn't a composer, but an inventor of genius. And I noticed Groundswell, as well on his website, talks about Cage as an inventor and a philosopher. What was Cage inventing?
I think he invented a lot of ways of making art, a lot of ways of thinking about the world. You know, his use of indeterminacy was an invention, his use of chance. The prepared piano would be an invention, and a lot of sort of percussion things which he put together through his life would be inventions. The number pieces, of which we're hearing one of his last pieces, was inventing a compositional method where he had these time brackets and you sort of play one or two notes in 15 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever, move on, and then the other person is doing the same thing but with different notes, and they're not necessarily coordinated. So it's a whole style, it's a whole number of ideas that kept on coming from Cage. I don't know if Arnold Schoenberg actually said that he wasn't a composer. He just said that he was an inventor. He didn't say...
Not a composer. Yeah, you can be both.
Yeah.
Good to know. In terms of the chants, because there is... more of a formal, I guess, in some of the pieces, chance is incorporated into the score. Does this make the concert more of a social experience than for other composers?
I'm not sure it would be social. I mean, because the players make choices, whoever is playing it, using whatever procedure. And but I think what it makes it, well, first of all, there's a couple of things. One is that he uses a lot of silence as well. And the idea of the silence is that you hear whatever else is going on in the room during that. So in a way, the listeners have it. You know, if you're listening, there's more kind of interaction, although really generally people are still fairly attentive. But the other part of it is kind of about attention, because with the pieces, you end up just sort of listening, and you know you're not listening to somebody who's trying to do something with your attention. You know, somebody's sort of letting you just drift around these different ideas and sounds, and there's generally enough structure in the way the chants is applied and instructions in the piece that whatever you might think about it being chants, whatever, to me, it often at the end sounds like a John Cage piece. For what, don't ask me how, but you know, there's many ways that he does it, and in many different ways, but it's more of that feeling, it's more of that sort of spiritual feeling of openness, rather than saying, oh, well, he uses this theme or this type of scale or whatever, because he used so many different types of materials through his career, and sometimes it's playing a bunch of records and, you know, tape pieces, all kinds of processing, and he was involved in all that sort of thing. Well, and then there was, like, for example, he did a piece called Roratorio, where, you know, he reads parts of Finnegan's Wake, and it can be any book actually. You use the I Ching to pick different phrases, then you read these in their kind of a random order, and then in this one you go through the local countryside, whatever it might be, and record water sounds. So this was Ireland, so he was recording all these little Irish streams and things and waves breaking on the shore. And then he had all Irish musicians playing traditional music, and they were just mixed in, and he kind of mixed it in a random sort of way, following the same procedures, while he himself sat there and read parts from Joyce's Finnegan's Wake. So that, you know, an interesting, I mean, totally different idea, kind of a theatrical piece. I saw another piece of his where he had eight people reading from the works of Thoreau about, I'm trying to remember the topic, I think it was about something to do with political themes, but it was called something to do with the weather, a lecture about the weather. And he had speakers all the way down the side of the hall. And as the readings started, suddenly there was these projections on the back, and it was throw line drawings, but made into negatives. So it was like white on black. And then you heard this sound of thunderstorm, like really well recorded in with eight speakers, come from the back and go through the hall. And then the line drawings started to look like lightning. And this was all mixed with eight readers, and randomly, you know, who are we going to hear now? Who are we going to hear now? Reading something different, all chance operations. Just really interesting ideas. So social, I guess, you know, you do tend to feel just a little bit more open in a way at a Cage concert than you might at some other concerts, yes.
Do you also, I saw on Groundswell's website that you talked about how Cage encourages people to listen to the sounds in themselves rather than what's done with them, with the sounds. Does this mean that the concert for the listeners, is it more of a thoughtful, a reflective, or a quiet experience?
It can be. I mean, he's written music which is quite a bit of it is quiet. Some of it is louder. But when you are listening to a sound for itself, you're not listening with the same expectation of getting a kind of a direct sort of message communicating this or that. So in a way, it is a little bit more reflexive. It's like meditating on an object, and you can just kind of relax and do that. And so, yeah, I would say be more meditative and thoughtful, and it doesn't help you because the music doesn't have that intention often. It doesn't help you to try to think and make things come together and sort out things like that. It's better to kind of get into the same mental state that, I mean, I'm not going to say better. You can do whatever you want, of course. But a lot of people tend to feel like that or don't, or you can do what you want with it. But that's the way I think that John Cage ends up getting his, you know, people listening to feel to experience what he wanted people to experience.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in today and really looking forward to the concert on Sunday.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Karen.
I've been speaking with Jim Hiscott. He's the co-curator with Cheryl Pauls of the event John Cage 100 Years, and that's happening this Sunday, April 1st. It's at the Franco-Manitoban Cultural Center, 340 Provence in Winnipeg. And if you are interested, there's information including how and where to purchase tickets at the Groundswell website, and that's gswell.ca, gswell.ca. And you're listening to Mud & Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.